This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. I use it with my patients at the Hoffman Center all the time. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to TryZonaNow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or TryZonaNow.com.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we got lots of time to talk health. Yeah, that's what we're going to be doing for this hour and next. For many of you who listen to us over the internet or via your mobile device, or in some cases, live via local radio station. 888-302-3684 is our number, and we really want to get you in on the conversation. So we got lots of time to take your calls. If you got questions or comments, you can weigh in. You can go right into the doctor's office, 888-302-3684, and we'll endeavor to answer your question to the best of my ability. All right. This item, we'll start the program with, is kind of surprising, all right? And it has to do with those fitness trackers that are ever so popular. Fitness trackers have really taken the marketplace by storm. You've got the Fitbit, and now you've got the new Apple Watch that can be, is now submersible. Actually, one of the reasons that I ditched my Apple Watch, I bought one, and I got I started using it. But I found that it was at best a mediocre fitness tracker. Yeah, it gave you your pulse while you're running, but it was kind of cumbersome because it had to be used in conjunction with an iPhone. And in my case, my iPhone's kind of big, unwieldy. I had to strap it to my forearm and kind of got in the way in terms of running. So I decided to opt for a simpler tracker that tracked my pulse, a wrist-based device, because now we can get a pulse not just with a chest strap, but we can get a pulse directly from the wrist. Also, you want GPS tracking, because then you can actually plot your course, your running course, your swimming course, your biking course. And there's a lot of ways that you can use fitness trackers to, well, essentially to provide you with motivation. The simplest device is just tell you how many steps you do. And for some people, that's really been a boon to their exercise programs because they endeavor to, you know, maybe their goal is 5,000 steps per day or 10,000 steps per day. And I actually know some fairly inveterate couch potatoes who've taken to exercising more because the Fitbit tracks their endeavors. So you would think that the use of these devices is associated with significant weight loss, right? You know, idea being that get off the couch, put in the time, monitor your performance, get some feedback that would incentivize you to exercise, and hence that would yield weight loss. Well, okay. In a clinical trial, researchers at the University of Pittsburgh studied 471 overweight people. And they fitted half of them with a device, probably similar to the Fitbit, that tracked steps and caloric expenditure. And half of them didn't. They were just instructed to exercise, go out there and do it. They got lectures and they got encouragement to go out and exercise, but they didn't have devices. And here's what happened. At the end of 18 months, well, turns out that the group that did not use the device lost about 5 pounds more than the people in the self-tracking group. Both groups lost weight, but the weight loss was more significant by a lot in the people who didn't use the devices. So what's going on here? The results are surprising. This study is the longest ever performed for any of these devices. And it's becoming clear that there's something lost in translation between the underlying purpose of these devices and the outcome, right? And there's a lot of speculation on why this result occurred. Some people refer to something called the health halo. The health halo is the idea that fitness tracking devices endow people with something called a health halo, which means that they're given a sense that they're doing something good for themselves. And this ties into a phenomenon that psychologists refer to as moral licensing. One way you can look at moral licensing is people come in after a hard day's work and they say, man, you know, that was a tough day at the office. Let me just chill and relax, and I'm going to give myself a little bit of a treat. I'm going to order out pizza because I had a really rough day at the office. And, you know, I think I'm going to get a pint of ice cream, too, because I had a rough day. This means that in one area of your life, you're being very, very disciplined and rigorous, and therefore, you're entitled to a reward in another realm, which usually is in the realm of food, right? So it's call it the health halo, moral licensing. Wearing fitness trackers gives people a sense that they're doing something good for themselves. And then you might say, okay, I walked 8,000 steps today, so I'll just have that grilled cheese or that mac and cheese, an entire bottle of wine. Because, hey, the device says that I burned off 800 calories. So let me select something from the menu that has 800 calories, and it'll all even out. Well, part of the problem is that you know, these old laws of thermodynamics, calories in, calories out. I mean, like, they work for cars, right? You put the gas in, the car goes a certain mileage. But it doesn't really work for people. And it turns out that exercise is not the panacea that it was once thought to be when it comes to weight loss. The soft drink industry has kind of ingeniously employed this in a campaign to make soft drinks acceptable. They say that soft drinks are fine, but the problem is that Americans are too sedentary. So if you have a healthy lifestyle and you're exercising, you can have a little bit of sugar. Have yourself a treat. And then they show active, young basketball players, kids running around in sports, athletes, track stars. And then they show them drinking a Pepsi or a Coke. And they say it's okay as long as you exercise. You're entitled to some of those extra calories. But when it comes to the average person, not a high-end athlete, someone who may swim, you know, 6,000 yards twice daily in a pool workout, like Michael Phelps, you can't eat junk. The more junk you eat, the more the weight stays on, and the exercise does little to expiate your dietary indiscretions, right? You can't burn off those calories because the calories that come from bad diet stick to you, and with great tenacity, it's hard to shed the extra weight that you get from bad diet, even with relatively high amounts of exercise. And actually, these trackers are designed for people who, you know, may just walk, and walking is great, but walking is not really very, very high-end athletic exertion. And so it may be that some of these overweight individuals, they started walking, they used the trackers, and maybe they granted themselves moral license to consume more food. And oh, by the way, one of the problems with these trackers, the studies show that people use them for a while, they get bored with them, or they get, sometimes they get angry at them. And they say, this is a bummer. This little device not ruling my life. I make my decisions. I'm not going to be exhorted by a little thing on my wrist telling me that I got to go out there and do it. And they just stick in the drawer. They get bored, and game over when it comes to exercise motivation. So fitness trackers, yeah, I think they perform a useful function. But I think one of the ways that we can make fitness trackers work better is if they're used in conjunction with a health practitioner, or a health coach, somebody who's there who holds you accountable for the exercise you do, interacts with you, coaches you, exhorts you, cajoles you to do more exercise, perhaps to overcome a health problem like obesity, diabetes, hypertension. And then, maybe then, we can leverage this technology to help people become healthier. 888-302-3684 is our number. We invite your phone calls. We'd love to hear from you on this beautiful weekend. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Howard Garrett, the Dirt Doctor here, president of the Texas Organic Research Center. As you probably know, it's a toxic world out there, but we can do something about it. Become knowledgeable consumers and use products that are safe and healthy, such as natural supplements that help protect the body's cells from toxic exposure. One of my favorites is Reg Active with ME3, the only probiotic proven to actually produce glutathione in the body. It's the body's master antioxidant, unique in its ability to repair and rebuild cellular damage caused by free radicals and exposure to environmental toxins. Glutathione decreases as we age. RegActive is great for rebuilding it, and I strongly recommend it.
Look for RegActive at Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide where Dr. O'Hara's probiotics are sold. Revolutionary. Remarkable. RegActive. Congratulations! You've survived disco nights and 12-hour days, not to mention fast food and life in the fast lane. Now it's time to fight the effects of modern life in the digital age and aging itself with one of life's natural miracles, garlic. Its healing and health-giving properties are great. But what about the odor? Well, you don't need to eat raw cloves to get all the good things in garlic. Just take Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. University research confirms that Kyolic is the one true antioxidant garlic supplement. It helps defend you against free radicals and helps keep blood pressure and cholesterol in check. So if Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract can do everything researchers report, just think what it could do for you. See for yourself. For more information, go to kyolic.com. That's KYOLIC.com. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. For people who take their garlic and their health seriously, look for Kyolic where quality natural supplements are sold.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And before we get to some of our features for today, we got lots to talk about because there's lots of happenings on the health front that I want to share with you. Here's something I want to share with you because I've been seeing really great results with our patients. And it's a natural way to help you control your blood pressure. Now, blood pressure, big problem for Americans over the age of 50. I think statistics show that over 55 or 60, virtually half of Americans require blood pressure medication. That's a really sad state of affairs. And, of course, we encourage diet and exercise, but for some people that's not enough, and so they have recourse to medication. If you're interested in managing your blood pressure without medication, I've got some really exciting news about an effective non-drug treatment. It's the Zona Plus. It's not a supplement. It's a device, a simple handheld smart device that you hold for 12 minutes once a day. And it's the real deal, folks, because it guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. And it's validated. It's been proven in 22 clinical studies that regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks with no negative side effects. And now, as a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company's offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. You can try it risk-free. It's the Zona Plus. Zona Health offers a 100% satisfaction guarantee. You can try the Zona Plus for 3 months and see if it works for you. And if it doesn't, return it for a full refund, no problemo. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call this number, toll free, 866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 866-669-9662 or go to the web, tryzonanow.com for the special offer. Okay, when it comes to asthma, asthma is a big problem in this country. And when you have an asthma attack, there are several things you can do. First, you can use your inhaler, but for some people, they're already using their inhaler, and they have what's called an exacerbation of asthma. Their asthma breaks through, and the inhaler doesn't work anymore. So doctors have a couple of recourses. One is to give you steroids, which really aren't good for you, and in the long run, you kind of get hooked, and that's a problem. And another way to look at it is that, well, maybe what's contributing to this exacerbation is an infection. So doctors hit patients with antibiotics routinely. So they, and this has been done for, you know, almost since the invention of antibiotics. And so they finally got around to doing a study to see if giving antibiotics helps in asthma attacks. And this happens so often in medicine and science. We're doing stuff, and finally we do a study. We try to evaluate whether what we're doing even makes sense. And it turns out that antibiotics show no benefit in asthma exacerbations. It's a big trial called the Azalea trial. They like these acronyms. It highlights the overuse of antibiotics in asthma attacks because they don't make a lot of difference. Adding the antibiotic azithromycin, sometimes referred to as a Z-Pak, okay? Z-Pak comes conveniently as a five-day pack with the dosage that you need. And it's a big gun for treating respiratory infections. But adding a Z-Pak to standard treatment for asthma exacerbations in adults had no significant therapeutic benefit in this randomized controlled clinical trial. The study was conducted in the United Kingdom. It looked at adults with a history of asthma for more than 6 months. And what they found was that when patients were given Z-Paks, they didn't improve. And there's just no significant reduction in symptoms or in test results, breathing tests, and so on. So in an editorial published with a study, they said that the overuse of antibiotics in adult patients with acute asthma exacerbations is a striking finding. And they urge doctors to rethink this. Now, here's a companion study that points out what actually does work. High-quality evidence suggests that vitamin D can reduce asthma attacks. Low levels of vitamin D have been linked to increased risk of asthma attacks in children and adults with asthma. And what the researchers found is that giving an oral vitamin D supplement reduced the risk of severe asthma attacks requiring hospital admission or emergency department visits, going to the ER, from 6% to around 3%. In other words, they halved the risk of ending up in the ER or the hospital. So think vitamin D for asthma. Antibiotics, yeah, they don't really work. What a simple solution. If only doctors would implement this on a more frequent basis. 888-302-3684 is our number. We invite your phone calls. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. You're listening to Intelligent Medicine. You're listening to Intelligent Medicine, brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. You can find a lot more on Intelligent Medicine at drhoffman.com. Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine podcast and automatically get a new episode 5 days a week. And please rate and review the podcast on iTunes to help us spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Also go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to buy your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. Finally, become a patient at the Hoffman Center. I'll personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles you hear about on the radio show and podcast, or make an appointment with Layla Mudin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Thanks for listening and for helping to spread the word about Intelligent Medicine. Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. Our number, 888-302-3684 for questions. And this week, if you go to drhoffman.com, you'll see our featured articles include 8 reasons why the FDA's recent ban on antibacterial cleansers is a good idea. You know, we're clean freaks in this country because we believe that we're fighting total war against germs. And you think, well, you know, scrub down your surfaces, use powerful disinfectants on your hands, spray them on your kids, use them in your toothpastes. But it turns out that's a bad idea. And I talk about 8 reasons why I agree with the FDA's decision. It's unusual that I agree with the FDA. The FDA has such a bad track record in terms of literally persecuting supplement manufacturers. And, of course, they often approve drugs that are soon found to be harmful or dangerous within years of their release. But here I think it's a good initiative because we don't need those things like triclosan in our personal care products. But in the same vein, there is a widely believed concept, the 5-second rule. And, it's interesting because, you see sometimes people eating something that they really like and a piece of it or the entire thing flops on the floor. And, the person wistfully looks at the food on the floor and then rushes to scoop it up. And in their mind, the 5-second rule suggests that maybe, just maybe, it's not so bad because germs take time to glom on to food. And in fact, it's a really prevalent belief because a British team recently conducted a survey which showed that 87% of people said that they would eat food dropped on the floor or that they already had. So the vast majority of people, they do this. And especially they do this when nobody else is looking, right? They also found that 81% of females adopt the 5-second rule. When it comes to men are a little more fastidious. Only 64% of men do. So what's up with that? Well, a rigorous study was recently conducted by Rutgers University in New Jersey and published appropriately in the American Society for Microbiology's journal. And what they concluded is that longer contact times can result in more bacteria transferring, but the real deal is that bad bacteria can jump on your food literally in the blink of an eye. And so here's how they set up this experiment. Rutgers researchers meticulously dropped various foods, watermelon, bread that was either buttered or unbuttered, and gummy candy, from a height of 5 inches onto 4 different surfaces that had been disinfected, and then they were inoculated with a certain bacteria called Enterobacter aerogenes. There were also various surfaces, stainless steel, ceramic tile, wood, and carpet. They really wanted to study this 6 ways to Sunday. And then they changed the contact time, ranging from less than 1 second to a full 5 minutes. Here are the results. Watermelon picked up the most contaminating bacteria. Gummy candy acquired the least. And interestingly, you'd think carpet would be the dirtiest. No, the highest transfer rates came from stainless steel and tile. So you think, everybody's going with stainless steel and tile on their kitchen surfaces, and turns out, no. Those are actually more likely to harbor harmful bacteria. And transfer rates from wood were sort of intermediate. So this is actually not the first time that an experiment like this has been conducted. In 2004, a high school student won what's called an Ig Nobel Prize. Not the Nobel Prize. An Ig Nobel Prize is kind of a parody of the Nobel Prize for debunking the 5-second rule with a kind of simple experiment. And then you may remember back in 2005, the TV show Mythbusters looked into it, and they concluded that the 5-second rule wasn't valid because by dropping dry saltines and wet pastrami onto bacteria-laden surfaces, they picked up bugs. And then yet another study, 2014, a British study, students found similar results to the Rutgers team. And it actually turns out the greatest transfer of contamination occurs when moist foods hit smooth surfaces. That's a bad combo, like watermelon, on tile or stainless steel that contains germs, that's trouble. So, so much for the five-second rule. And this is in the realm of, I think people know this. They just think that just this one time, and the food is too valuable to throw away, so I'm not gonna get rid of it. And, you know, maybe you will survive that exposure to bacteria. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. But if you think that the five-second rule applies from a scientific standpoint, you are deluding yourself. All right, this is a very interesting study because we endeavor to eat healthier. And a lot of you out there are working on healthier diets. And some of you may be undergoing a certain amount of stress about the foods that you eat. The foods have to be gluten-free. They have to be organic. They have to be natural. There's a great deal of anxiety sometimes associated with eating healthier. This is sometimes called orthorexia nervosa. This is a term that was coined by a colleague of mine, of people who are a little obsessed with their food choices. Well, what this study is saying is that even if you eat healthier food, anxiety may trump the benefits of the healthier food choices. And when I look at the study, I'm actually a little unhappy with the way they set up the study. I'm not sure if it really says what it purports to say. But what they did is they compared two meals. One was a meal that was high in saturated fat, and one was a meal that was higher in monounsaturated fat, so thought to be healthier. I kind of reject the premise, though, that the saturated fat food per se was harmful. But in the study, what they found is before a stressor was applied, they found that the saturated fat meal actually promoted inflammation more than the monounsaturated meal. There were higher scores for things like C-reactive protein, which is a marker of inflammation, with the high-fat, saturated fat meal challenge versus the monounsaturated meal. So they established that, in essence, that the monounsaturated meal was a healthier meal. Okay, fine. Then, and this study was done in women, so we don't know the results applied to men, but what they did was they looked at the antecedent to the meal. In other words, what was happening in the lives of these women in the preceding day. And what they found was that when there was a high stress score in the preceding day, the difference between the bad food and the good food was obliterated, was completely neutralized. In other words, the protective benefits, the anti-inflammatory benefits of the healthier meal were negated by the stress. And so I'm looking here at the study, and what they say is that these data are important because they demonstrate that stress can heighten inflammation and even trump the benefits of diet, and that this inflammation characterizes a number of disorders and systemic diseases, including cardiovascular disease, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, rheumatoid arthritis, asthma, multiple sclerosis, chronic pain, and psoriasis. And moreover, there was a link between all these conditions and depression. So maybe, just maybe, there's a vicious cycle of inflammatory disorders and depression, because, you know, there's the mind-body connection, and that the depression may feed into the vicious cycle, negating the benefits of even a healthy diet. So, interesting and thought-provoking study. I'm not sure if the way they set it up really is the best way. I might have included as a healthy meal a diet that does include saturated fat, but that includes a lot of beneficial polyphenols from fresh fruits and vegetables, nuts, something like a Mediterranean diet with lots of olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, spices like curcumin. This is what I consider an anti-inflammatory diet. But nonetheless, an interesting study that suggests that we got to deal with stress in our lives first and foremost, and that diet is only part of the equation for reducing inflammatory and degenerative diseases. 888-302-3684, our number. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Congratulations! You've survived disco nights and 12-hour days, not to mention fast food and life in the fast lane. Now it's time to fight the effects of modern life in the digital age and aging itself with one of life's natural miracles, garlic. Its healing and health-giving properties are great, but what about the odor? Well, you don't need to eat raw cloves to get all the good things in garlic. Just take Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. University research confirms that Kyolic is the one true antioxidant garlic supplement. It helps defend you against free radicals and helps keep blood pressure and cholesterol in check. So if Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract can do everything researchers report, just think what it could do for you. See for yourself. For more information, go to Kyolic.com. That's Kyolic.com. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract. For people who take their garlic and their health seriously, look for Kyolic where quality natural supplements are sold.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. Dr. Ronald Hoffman with you. And if you are at risk for Parkinson's disease, or if you've had Parkinson's disease, should you smoke and drink coffee? Yeah. Well, according to some new studies, well, maybe not smoke, but when it comes to caffeine, caffeine appears to have a protective effect against Parkinson's. Research showed that people who had an extra cup of coffee a day were more likely to have a decrease in symptom severity. Higher caffeine consumption was associated with a reduced amount of motor and non-motor disability. And we're talking motor symptoms like tremor, rigidity, slowness of movement, postural instability. The non-motor disabilities can include pain or depression. So researchers say, we welcome further clinical research to be conducted in this important area to further understand how caffeine and coffee consumption can help patients. Is it the caffeine or is it the coffee? Well, yes, there are beneficial antioxidant compounds in coffee that are non-caffeine, and maybe it's those dark polyphenols that protect the brain. Okay, when it comes to smoking, we know that smoking is bad for you, and no, we're not suggesting that anyone take up smoking, but nicotine can be delivered in ways where you don't inhale lots of toxic fumes. There are other nicotine delivery systems, such as nicotine lozenges, nicotine gum. I'm not crazy about those things people are puffing on that are delivering nicotine in smoke form or in aerosolized form, because you're getting a lot of toxic chemicals along with the nicotine. But a new study suggests that nicotine may protect the aging brain. Nicotine has effects on neurotransmission. It is, I mean, obviously it's an addictive substance. It does something to you neurochemically. And what they found in a recent study is that nicotine may be neuroprotective. And partly that may be due to its effect, its well-known ability to suppress the appetite. Okay? I mean, one of the reasons why people don't stop smoking, they're worried sick about the possibility that they're just going to put on the pounds. Women especially, you know, Virginia Slim, so that very clever advertising campaign showing ultra-slim women smoking ultra-slim little cigarillos, that the connotation was you're going to stay skinny even though you may die. And, you know, given a choice, some people will opt for skinny. So research shows that nicotine may reduce anxiety, and also it may be neuroprotective. Actually, some studies have specifically shown that when it comes to Parkinson's, nicotine patches may be a way to slow the progression of Parkinson's disease. I'm not suggesting that people who are not hooked on nicotine get hooked on nicotine, but maybe, just maybe, this can become a part of a protocol with a lot less toxic effects than some of the currently used drugs for Parkinson's disease. We've actually suggested for some of our patients that they use nicotine patches, and that has actually helped with their Parkinson's symptoms. But drinking coffee, that's the easy part. Okay, this item is of great interest to me and hopefully to the many patients I treat with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, because we've got new medications for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, but I see so many patients who either don't respond to them, they only get partial relief or no relief at all, or they have terrible side effects, which necessitates that they stop the medications. And one of the important things that I look at is, you know, what's going on in the gastrointestinal tract of these folks. It's thought that bacteria may be contributing to these problems, a messed up microbiome or dysbiosis. And we've also talked about what's called the yeast connection, which is, could fungus in the gastrointestinal tract make things worse for patients with these conditions? In fact, one of the blood tests that proves whether you have Crohn's disease is a blood test for yeast. It's a antibodies to Saccharomyces. Saccharomyces is a yeast species. So it stands to reason that we ought to be treating fungal infections in these patients. And I've long been doing this with diet, antifungal medications, probiotics that compete with or suppress the growth of fungus. And so lo and behold, this is the first study that identifies fungus as a key factor in Crohn's disease, just out. Now, people in the field of integrative medicine have been talking about this for literally three or four decades, for as long as I can remember, in the field of holistic medicine that I practice. We have implicated candida or yeast as a potential cause of gastrointestinal problems, even Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And what they find here in this study is they talk about, you've heard about the microbiome, they talk about the mycobiome. Myco means fungus. So the mycobiome of patients with Crohn's disease is different. They analyzed the stool samples of 20 Crohn's patients and 28 Crohn's-free patients. And what they found is strong fungal bacterial interactions. It looks like the bacteria and the fungus are having kind of a primitive sex. They're working together, maybe swapping genes to create a bridge, a biofilm, a thin, slimy layer of microorganisms that adheres to the wall of the intestine, which can prompt inflammation that results in the symptoms of Crohn's disease. They cooperate. They work together. And so it may be that this is a very, very promising avenue for helping patients with Crohn's disease. Diet certainly makes a difference in those patients. It may suppress the growth of yeast because sugar feeds yeast, but also possibly antifungal medication, which is something that I use in some of our patients with good results. Okay, we are being exhorted to get the flu shot. In fact, they're telling people, you know, get it early because, you know, flu season's upon us. Yeah, it may seem warm in certain parts of the country. You're still walking around in shirt sleeves, but flu season is upon us. It'll soon be cold. People will be, you know, walking around with thermometers in their mouths and, you know, 4+6. So get your flu shot now. They're offering it to places like CVS, pharmacies. Get it early. Well, headline, patients over 65 may consider delaying the flu shot, an expert says, because if you're over 65, don't get the flu vaccine in September or August. It's a marketing scheme. They say that individuals over 65 generally have a somewhat lowered immune response. The flu shot may only confer benefits for a very short period of time, just a few weeks or months, and therefore, don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes. Get your flu shot later. Wait until, if you're going to take it, and I'm a little skeptical about the benefits altogether, if you're going to take it when the flu hits your area. Yeah. 888-302-3684. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We got lots more time to discuss stuff. So stay with us and join us. Call us with your questions, 888-302-3684. This is Intelligent Medicine.